This is All Things Considered on 90.1 WABE. I'm Dennis O'Hare. Now that the DeKalb County School Board has six new members appointed by Governor Nathan Deal, will it make a difference in the classroom? That is a question that has attracted a lot of conversation in DeKalb County, including from the president of Oglethorpe University. Dr. Lawrence Shaw is in his eighth year as Oglethorpe president. He published an op-ed piece recently in Maureen Downey's Get Schooled blog at the Atlanta Journal-Constitution that prompted a lot of dialogue, including a reply from a DeKalb County teacher and a lot of comment back and forth as well from those who read the pieces. Dr. Shaw, welcome. Good to have you.
Good afternoon, Dennis, and good to be with you.
One of the key points of your piece in Maureen Downey's blog was this sentence or two. The state can appoint six new school board members in DeKalb for a year or so, and we might see some marginal improvement in governance, but it will be temporary, and I can pretty much promise you that we will not see a change in educational outcomes. Why did you say that?
Well, I think, you know, I know some of these new board members that have been appointed, and I think it's a good group, and I think they will make some difference in terms of how that district is administered. But, you know, the issues with performance in school begins pre-K. If kids are not reading at an appropriate level at grade three, the chances of them being successful in school for the rest of their lives is minimal. So we've got to find a way to have a system that begins to provide a quality education to students at the nursery school level through kindergarten into first grade, and a change in leadership for a few months isn't going to make any difference there.
So is the problem with the curriculum that we're giving kids even as early as pre-K, or is the problem with the teachers, or is the problem with parents not being involved? Where are we starting behind from the beginning?
Well, in all those places. So, you know, I'm have the privilege of being the chair of the board of the Eastlake Foundation, which is the foundation that supports the Drew Charter School in the Eastlake neighborhood. And, you know, that's a public charter school that's working. And what we found there is that it starts pre-K. It starts with a quality opportunity for students to be exposed to good teachers, to a quality environment, to get their parents involved. It then requires a well-run school that's not overburdened with bureaucratic and administrative things, a principal that knows how to support good teachers and how to counsel teachers who are not performing at a good level to either perform better or to have them end up somewhere else. It requires high expectations of these students, you know, a culture in the school that these students can be successful. It requires a discipline in a school and expectations about how students behave. And then you have got to maintain that year after year after year. You've got to have quality teachers in first grade and second grade and third grade, you know, straight through high school. You know, it is not rocket science. It's not that we don't know what works, but it is there's a commitment to quality and excellence that exists in places like that, and you see that in other public schools, you know, in the city and out. I was talking to some House members of the Senate yesterday about issues in higher education, and the way I ended the conversation when they asked, is there anything else you wanted to say? I said, if I were in your seat, I would have at the top of my agenda each and every session the quality of our K-12 education in the state, because if you don't fix that, we're sort of doomed, I think, to mediocrity.
Now, you mentioned you're involved in Drew Charter School in the Eastlake area of Atlanta. Are you saying, though, that you can't get all of the things that you just outlined in the traditional public school?
You know, that's a great question. I mean, I wouldn't say you can't get them, because, you know, I don't believe charter schools are sort of the single answer. There are a lot of poor performing charter schools. You can run a bad charter school.
At least some of the early data show that the charter schools as a whole seem to be doing no better and no worse than the traditional public schools.
Well, it varies state by state. I think there is something about the large school districts that sort of are operating, you know, as a single entity, that encourages dysfunction. And I don't think it's impossible, because there are you know, there are examples of larger districts that work, but if you sort of watch in our region, the sort of one district after another fail, you've got to say it's not just that superintendent, or you see superintendent or superintendent after fail, or you see one dysfunctional school board after another fail. I think it'd be silly to say there's, you know, it's just about you're choosing the wrong people. I mean, I think there is something about the size of these systems that's getting in the way.
Are you saying you simply can't restructure these school systems and save the model of public education?
Well, I think you can. I mean, I think you have to save public education, and the charter schools are a form of public education, which I think is an important form. But I don't think that's the entire answer. You know, there are cities that have begun to experiment with sort of smaller microcosms within a larger district to sort of try to break that large animal down and give more autonomy to sort of smaller clusters of schools or individual schools. Because, you know, in the end, these things come down to leadership. And the closer that quality leadership is to the school, I think the better the school will be.
Then how do you measure whether you're getting better or not without falling into what some people view anyway as a trap of just measuring performance based on high-stakes tests or on kind of data that might apply well to businesses but don't apply to schools? It's harder to measure the kinds of outcomes that you get from schools than you would, say, let's say, productivity in a business.
Right, yeah. And so I do think, you know, we have this tendency in America to think things are sort of simple answers, so that, you know, we end up with these No Child Left Behind tests that, you know, we end up thinking are the be-all and end-all. There's an important place for testing and making sure you're testing the right things, but you can't do that to the exclusion of other things. And so I think we often sort of jump to what we hope is an easy answer, like, well, the answer is charter schools. To me, that's not the answer. Or the answer is vouchers. Well, to me, that's not the answer. Or it's more complex than that. On the other hand, as I said before, it is not rocket science. We do know we have models of what works, both in the city and in the country. And the number of those models increasing, the whole KIPP system is a great example of, you know, started off as a single school, and now they've got literally hundreds of schools across the country, including schools here, that do really well.
You talked about breaking down some big school systems and giving more autonomy in smaller pieces. A lot of that would then depend on having parents involved. Some of the legislation that we've seen this session of the legislature has talked about parents who want to start a charter school, for instance. Well, that would mean that the parents are involved. Are we running the risk here of leaving behind the many, many kids whose parents, for whatever reason, aren't involved, and then we're just going to take the ones whose parents are, and they go off someplace, and you have this educational permanent underclass?
Well, we do have an educational permanent underclass now. You know, in my experience, if parents are encouraged to be involved, opportunities are created for them to be involved, and they're given information, you know, by and large, parents' instincts are to be involved and to protect their kids. Like, you know, there are examples where that's not the case, and it's often harder for parents without means to get to a school. But I mean, Drew's a great case. I mean, these kids are, you know, largely they're coming from families that are the working poor, yet they've got an unbelievable involvement of parents in that school, and it's because the school encourages it, opens it, facilitates it, and provides clear information as to the performance of their student and the performance of the school. And I think one of the things now that most parents, they think the school that their child is in is a good school, regardless of whether it is or not, because there's no real data about the quality of that school that comes out to the parents. Florida has now adopted a grading system of grading all the schools in the state, A, B, C, D, E, F. I've heard talk of introducing that into Georgia. It might be an interesting thing to consider.
How, though, would you do that measurement? Because one of the real concerns about, say, teacher evaluation is, okay, you measure teacher evaluation by student performance. Well, then that gives you a kind of incentive for the teacher to say, okay, I can somehow find a way to inflate student performance, cheat on student performance. We've already had cheating scandals. If you have the wrong evaluation tool, aren't you opening the door to even more, and an inaccurate measurement of how the school is doing.
I think we've overreacted to what we've called the cheating scandal as well. These things are capable of being fixed. We are capable of testing kids fairly. We do tend to swing from one end to the other end, and almost always we're better off with some middle ground.
Why haven't we done it already? I mean, if it were that easy to create these kinds of objective yet flexible measuring systems, wouldn't we have done it by now? It's not like this conversation is a new one.
New one, right. So, you know, I have a particular view of that, which is that if my son or daughter was in one of those non-performing schools, or your son and daughter, or, you know, the sons and daughters of the people who are running the state, we wouldn't put up for it, and things would have changed. But instead, we, you know, at some point, we remove our kids from the public school system, we send them to our own schools, and we leave behind the people who don't have much of a voice in the state. And so until the people who are in charge of running this place, the state, understand that the future that their own future is dependent on those kids left behind doing well, things won't change.
And how do you change that mindset? Because that's become apparently an increasingly prevalent line of thought.
Right. I don't know the answer to that. How do you change that mindset? I mean, if you look at the data from the state of Georgia and county by county, you look at which counties are doing well economically as a county, it's the county with a higher percentage of high school graduates and college graduates. If you look at the many, many counties in the state of Georgia that are failing and flailing, it correlates directly with the number of kids who are graduating from college and high school. I mean, education still is, you know, the economic driver of this country. Doesn't take a genius to look at what's happening in a state like Georgia and see that we would, as a state, we would collectively be way better off if half our kids weren't dropping out of high school.
Let me give you a concrete example of a debate on that subject that's going on right in your area. You're not far from Dunwoody. There's a move to create a separate Dunwoody school system because of the problems in the DeKalb County schools. Is that, in the long run, going to solve the problem, in your view?
Yeah, it's an interesting issue. I mean, so what problem are we solving there, and what problem would Dunwoody solve by creating its own school system? So, you know, in some sense, I'd say, you know, that's like a group of people, generally a group of more privileged people, finding a way to distance themselves from other people as opposed to trying to solve sort of the broader problem. In the long run, I don't think it's a healthy trend to have people to view the world narrowly like that.
But aren't they also trying to do something that you talked about earlier, trying to break down a big school system that isn't functioning? And on the other hand, what happens to the kids that get left behind?
Right. Yeah, and so if I were a parent in Dunwoody, one could understand why, if I thought that we could create a better public school system if I made it smaller and narrowed the population, I completely appreciate that. I mean, people are paying a lot of taxes and would prefer to send their kids to public schools if they were good schools. So I can understand and appreciate the rationale behind it. Do I think in the long run that will collectively help our community? Probably not.
So where are we? It sounds as if what you're talking about is identifying a dilemma. But how difficult is it going to be to solve it? Again, we've had lots of conversations about this over the years, and yet in DeKalb, to come back to the immediate example, academic achievement really hasn't gone anywhere.
No, and as I said, I'm not critical of the governor's move to replace these school board members, and you know why I do expect that at some level it will improve the functioning of that group for some period of time. I don't see it as impacting the long run quality of education in DeKalb County, which is not in a good place and hasn't been in a good place in a long time.
In education now, we have often very hardened lines of people who, on the one hand, feel public schools are failing and we need to do something about them, particularly in DeKalb County. And on the other hand, people who say, well, The solution proposed by the first group is actually an attack on public schools, and they're just trying to dismantle them one piece at a time. How do we get people on both sides with good ideas to talk to each other?
I mean, I do think on this public education issue, like we just came through a presidential election. Where was public education in the entire two-year election cycle? I mean, you could probably count on a hand how many times it got talked about. It needs to be at the top of our country's agenda. It appears to be at the bottom of our agenda.
So are you saying that one key to breaking down this gridlock of ideas has to come from the leaders, the political leaders?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's because it's a systemic. There's something broken with the system. There's a lack of will, a lack of commitment beyond the school board mess in DeKalb County. We're defunding public education at the moment.
Are you saying that we, whether it's DeKalb County or anywhere else, have to be willing to pay more for systems that aren't working very well?
Absolutely. I mean, it's not the only problem, because you can spend money really stupidly. But if you go back to public versus private education and look, you know, what people are willing to pay a lot of money to have the kids well educated, if they know that the kids are going to be well educated. So public education is an investment in our collective future, and we're refusing to make that investment. And it's a very short-sighted, short-run choice.
Is it a chicken or the egg problem now? Because many taxpayers would say, okay, why would I want to sink more money into a system that isn't working? And on the other hand, it's not going to work any better unless there is money not only put into it, but then spent wisely and spent well.
Yes. I mean, I think you're right. It's defunding public education is a really bad idea, but allowing public education to continue in its present form is also a really bad idea. There needs to be, I think, bold and multiple experiments with new ideas, because maintaining the status quo is not working.
You have two adult children who are teachers in the school systems. Other than that, an obvious personal stake in this, you're a university president in DeKalb County. It's a private university. What's your stake in the DeKalb County school problem?
You know, I'm an educator, and so the students that come to Oglethorpe, and Oglethorpe's an exceptional school, and we get exceptional students, are largely coming out of public high schools in the state of Georgia. They're coming to us, and we're getting the best and the brightest. They're coming to us not very well educated. We do a lot in 4 years, but you can see the decline in public education if you've been doing this for a significant amount of time. So there's self-interest there in terms of being a university president, but I spend an awful lot of time, of my time, you know, doing civic work, and my civic work is largely around public education. So that's the chair of the board of the East Lake Foundation. I was the former chair of the board of Project Grad, that works with high school students in the public schools in Atlanta to help them get to college. I was a member of the Atlanta Education, the AEF, the Atlanta Education Fund Board. So I commit and spend a lot of my time around this issue of public education, because, you know, these are the kids that are eventually coming to college.
Dr. Lawrence Schall is the president of Oglethorpe University. Dr. Schall, thanks so much for giving us this time. We really appreciate it.
Dennis, it's been a pleasure. Thank you.